Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya 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 Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai Namachara Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sugaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shrasti Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gova Govita Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Ganga Jamuna Tulasi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrindi Ki Jai Samavepta Bhakti Vrindi Ki Jai Go Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru Jigaranga, all glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacharesha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This is a presentation on forms of God. Actually, I spoke on this previously, which was actually a summary of Lagu Bhagavatamrita. This is same subject with a little bit of a different approach, and also includes Lord Chaitanya. So, who is God, or does God exist? This is a question that people will ask in the modern world. It did not arise so much in previous ages, but with the modern age, especially with the rise of science, many people have questioned the existence of God. And this, of course, has led to a society of gross materialism because of the lack of any personality or force who can state what are the moral standards for humanity. So we have some people who believe in God and some people who don't believe in God in the modern world. So, those who believe in God, however, are of various types. We have many, many different faiths in the world. Some of them don't actually believe in God also, or if we take it philosophically. But they nevertheless worship somebody or something. So, in that sense we say some sort of God is there. So when they have some sort of worship going on, or some object of reverence, and then we call that a religion. And we have major religions of the world, like Christianity and Judaism and Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism, what we call Hinduism. Then we have other things like Shinto and whatever. And then, of course, Christianity gets divided up into many different groups as well. Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, and a few other Orthodoxes also. And Protestants of unlimited varieties, I think. And then some things in the modern world which have come up in Christianity also, so many groups there as well. And if we look at Buddhism also, many groups also, and some of which have extreme differences in their philosophy. Which spread all over Asia. And of course in Islam we have different groups as well. And then we have other, what we call in the present day primitive religions as well, many groups that have their own system of worship. But we find that most civilizations in ancient times, they did have some sort of worship going on. And it wasn't without some sort of faith. So it's remarkable in the modern world we have a large group of people who have no faith at all in anything. And this, of course, is promoted by governments and society itself, a no-religion type of society. So, therefore, if we have the no-God society, ultimately things become meaningless because there is no standard for anything. Life becomes meaningless, and therefore we don't have any goal. And consequently, our conduct is also just a relative type of thing. What we think is right and wrong is a relative thing. So it becomes a rather a depressing situation if we don't have any God. So, as I mentioned, we have many major religions of the world, what we might call religions, and they believe in some sort of God. We have belief in one God, and then we have belief in many gods. So the many god option we'll see there in many religions, like the Greeks had many gods. Of course, they had one, was it Zeus was the main god, we could call him Jupiter. He was the main god, but he wasn't really like a supreme person in the sense that we speak of God in Christian church or in Islam or even in the Vedanta. But they have many, many types of gods for different purposes. And Egyptians, of course, had many types of gods also, and they're worshipping. And we have the equivalent within India also with the many Devatas. So we have the water deity Varuna and the fire deity Agni, and various deities for the elements, and then for the sun and all different planets in the sky. And as well, we have minor devatas for the local river, the local tree, and the whatever. And of course, Earth has a deity also. So in this sense, we seem to have many gods within the tradition of India also. But at the same time, we see that the concept of one God is considered to be an advancement over the many God concept. Yeah? Of course, that could be, we say, our prejudice also. But those who have come to the one God concept are considered to have some sort of superior philosophy or whatever. And it's become common in the religions. So Christianity has one God, and no matter how many different groups they have, sects or whatever, Judaism has one God, Islam has one God. And in Vedanta, again, we have one God, as opposed to Karma Mimamsa, which has many gods. even within India, we have the concept of one God. So to say that Indians worship many gods, actually, that's true in practical sense, but philosophically speaking, in Vedanta, there's one supreme God. So that in that, there's some commonality with the other major religions of the world. There's something left out here, and that is Buddhism. There's no God. So that's a very unique religion where there's no God at all. So it would be something like materialism, but it isn't. So that's why it's a bit peculiar. But even though they say no God, we end up with Buddhist temples in which they have big Buddhas. So if you go to Japan and you go to a Buddhist temple, then what you'll see in the temple is Buddha. Or if you go to China, Buddha. If you go to Sri Lanka or Burma and go to a Buddhist temple, you'll see Buddha there. So in spite of the fact that there's no one God, so to speak, they do have worship of Buddha. But philosophically speaking, to say no God at all, nothing. So that's a rather unique feature of their religion. So anyway, we have this choice of many gods and one God. Now, when we get to the one God, then we also have a controversy. God, we're saying, is spiritual. So then we have a controversy. Does he have a form or body, or he has no body? Does he have qualities, spiritual qualities, or no qualities? Does he have activities? Does he have activities or no activities? Huh? So this is the controversy that takes place in Vedanta, this last one. Yeah? Yeah? From the Vedanta Sutras and from the Upanishads. Yeah? So the major followers of Vedanta in India have become two groups. The form and the no form groups. So the ones that say God has a form, these are the Vaishnavas. So we have Vaishnava Vedanta. They explain the Brahma Sutras and Upanishads in terms of one supreme God who has qualities, form, and activities. And then we have the other person who accepts Vedanta, Shankaracharya. And he says, no form. God ultimately has no form. The one supreme God, which he calls Brahman, but no form, no qualities, no activities. This is in common with the other major religions of the world, like Judaism, Christianity, Islam. They also say God has no form, ultimately. So that much he has in common. There are also differences because Shankaracharya says there is nothing except Brahman, or God. There is no jivas, there is no material world. Whereas Judaism, Christianity, Islam don't say that. Say the world is real, we are real, etc. So there's not only God, there's other objects also, but Shankaracharya is only Brahman, that's the only reality. So that's the extreme position he takes. So in any case, we have God with form and God has no form. This is a big controversy that arises because of the ambiguity of certain words that are used in the Upanishads. So there are places that says only Brahman exists, or Brahman has no form and no qualities, etc. So taking those statements, Shankaracharya has made this philosophy of Brahman with no form and no qualities. Vaishnavas, on the other hand, take the same statements and interpret them differently because of the context and what is previously and later said, where they it's describing a form for God and activities of God as the creator, etc., in the same work of the Upanishads. So therefore, they say that God has a form. So anyway, we have God with form and God has no form. We see that most religions in the world have a difficulty accepting form. Nevertheless, it creeps into the religion anyway. As they say, Buddhism, they have Buddhas, Christianity, they have Mother Mary there in the church, and Christ, the crucifix, etc. And usually people identify their faith by thinking of, you know, Christ and Mother Mary, etc., in the Catholic Church. And of course, if you go to the Vatican or those churches in Italy, you see that all over the church there's figures of saints and this and that. So they want to have some form there also. They can't completely say no form, but nevertheless, theologically speaking, they have no form for God ultimately. Based upon, of course, the Bible and the Judaic texts, which is the stem for Christianity and Islam. So because it says no form there, therefore they say no form. So they have difficulty accepting that because they associate form with the material world. We have forms here. So if you have something spiritual, it has to be opposite of what we have here. So therefore, there should be no form. There should be no qualities like here because it should be opposite of what we've got here. So it's a kind of logic that is used by some people. Of course, it's flawed logic. Because it's derived from, you know, material mind, so therefore that logic is not proper. But anyway, that's the logic. We have form here, we have qualities here, therefore God should not have form, should not have qualities, because he's spiritual. It should be a negative negation of the material world, so to speak. Okay, so anyway, so it is rather unique that we have one spiritual God with form. Now, of course, we have the Devata worships and the many gods. They have forms, definitely, like we have Zeus and Apollo in the Greeks, and we have
Egyptian gods. They all have forms, etc. But they're like demigods with material bodies. And in India we have the devatas with material bodies also. So that's common among the devata worshippers and the many god forms. We have forms. But when it comes to one form, then it's more difficult for people to accept form in God. The Vaishnavas, however, not only accept form of God, but they also accept many forms of God. So this is quite maybe shocking. And then people say, oh, you're worshipping many gods again because you've got so many forms. But the idea is no, though the Vaishnavas recognize many forms of God, it's all one person, ultimately. It's not different. It's not a different person. It's one person with many forms, which is also difficult for people to understand because we haven't seen that in the material world. But this is the idea within Vaishnava Vedanta. There's one Supreme God, but he, that one God, has many forms. Why do we know that? Ultimately, we go to the scriptures, and this is what scriptures tell us. Logically speaking, we could say that if God is all-powerful, why can't he have a form? If he can have a form, why can't he have any forms? Because he's all-powerful. He's got powers, so he can do that. The other more esoteric answer given, for instance, in the Brihadbhagavatamrita, is that why God has many forms is because we have many devotees. And they're different. All devotees are different. They're individuals. So some like to worship God in one form, some like another form. And in those particular forms, there's a certain emotion or a certain devotion which is not present in the other type of worship. So the worshipper of Nrsimha, he gets one feeling. The worshipper of Ramchandra gets another feeling. The worshipper of Rahade gets another feeling. The worshipper of Krishna has a different feeling. So it's all based because the form is different. Therefore, the feeling of the devotee is somewhat different. So for catering to the different devotees, therefore, the Lord can have many different forms. And of course, many of these forms are functional as well. For instance, we have Matsya. Why would God take a fish form of all things? Because generally we don't think of fish as very beautiful. They're very low creatures. According to the Vedic literature, they're down on the scale of evolution, so to speak. And human beings are high up. So why would God take a fish form of all things? But it's functional because during the flood, when there was no land, he rescued Vaivasvatamanu, and he rescues the Vedas and all the creatures. So therefore, God takes a fish form because fish like swim in the water. So the practical form. Or he takes a turtle form. Turtles are also not considered to be very intelligent or very beautiful, and they walk very slow. But nevertheless, to hold up the Mandara Mountain when they were churning the milk ocean, they needed a firm base because every time they tried to churn the ocean with the Mandara Mountain, it fell into the ocean, it sunk. So they needed some stability to hold it up. So then Kurma appeared, and on the back of Kurma, then they were able to put that mountain and use it as a churning rod to churn the milk ocean and bring out the nectar. The Supreme Lord took the form of the turtle, who's very solid and firm. He acts as a nice basis for everything, so he supported that mountain. So that's a functional aspect of the Supreme Lord. So, the Lord can have many forms according to function, according to desire of the devotee. So, in all of these forms, he actually has all of his powers and all of his qualities, but he may not manifest in that particular form all the powers or all the qualities. Some of the forms of the Lord act as sages, and other act as warriors or kings, etc. So even within one form, because the Lord is all-powerful, he can manifest many forms. And this we see with Krishna. In the Rasa-lila, Krishna he's one person, but then he manifested for each gopi there a form. So there were 3 billion gopis in the Rasa-lila, and Krishna expanded himself into 3 billion forms. And in this way, each gopi was completely satisfied because Krishna was playing complete attention to the one gopi. So that gopi thought, but actually they couldn't see all the other expansions of Krishna. And they only saw Krishna with themselves. God can expand himself in this way with no difficulty at all. When Krishna was in Dwarka, Narada Muni came there and he was astonished when he saw Krishna in every palace. What was astonishing was it was all Krishna. It was not some made-up form or anything. It was exactly Krishna. And Krishna was doing different things in different palaces simultaneously. In some palaces, he saw Krishna acting in the morning and some in the evening, even though it was a certain time of the day when he got in there. They were doing different things in different parts of the day. And some of them were doing different activities of different seasons even, simultaneously. And so this showed the extraordinary power of Krishna to even distort time. And he was one form, but many forms at the same time. So, not difficult. Yeah? So, he can manifest generally as Krishna. He has two arms, but sometimes Krishna manifests four arms in Dwarka. Yeah? And another form is Vishnu. He has four arms in Vaikuntha. Vishnu rules over the kingdom of Vaikuntha and he has four arms. But even Vishnu can manifest eight arms. When Krishna and Arjuna went to the see Mahavishnu to get back the sons of the Brahmana and Dwarka, they went to see Mahavishnu and Mahavishnu was there. He had eight arms, not even four arms, he had eight arms. So sometimes Vishnu can display eight arms or four arms or whatever. Or we can have the Lord with thousands of arms, as we have in the Vishwarupa. Or when Nrsimhadev was fighting with Hiranyakasipu, then you see in the Bhagavatam, the picture there, where he has thousands of arms fighting with thousands of soldiers. So the Lord can manifest any number of arms at will. So we have a great variety of forms of the Lord. And they're all beautiful and astonishing. And spiritual. He may represent himself in different varnas, so he may be brahminical. So as the Yuga avatar in Satya Yuga, he becomes Yajna. And he does, Treta Yuga, he does sacrifices, acting as a brahminical priest. He can act like a sage, who are also basically brahminical, also like Kapila, or like Dattatreya, or Vedavyas. He can act like a kshatriya. So Parsaram acted as a kshatriya and slew the kshatriyas. Or he can be like Prithu, King Prithu, or Ramchandra in the kshatriya dynasty. He can act as a doctor, Dhanvantari, give medicine, and started Ayurveda. He can be a farmer. So Balaram is often depicted with a plow. So what does he do with the plow? Sure, plowing the field. So he's represented as a farmer. And of course, Krishna and Balaram and Nanda and the whole village, they were Vaishyas. They were taking care of the cows. So the Lord could come as a Brahmana, as a Kshatriya, or as a Vaishya. Cowherd like Krishna. He can come as a Brahmachari. So he was as Vamana. He was a dwarf Brahmachari, and as Kumaras, he's a Brahmachari. Krishna, of course, acted as a Brahmachari also for some time. He could be very renounced, like a sannyasi, as Narayan Narayan, or as Buddha, or as Rishabhadev. He can even act as a woman, Mohini avatar. So we see a great variety here, and just in terms of human-like forms. Male, female, young, old, kshatriya, brahmana, vaishya, etc. And not only human form, which is more shocking for people around the world, because if they want to think of God, they'll think of him with a human form, as in the Sistine Chapel, where we have God the Creator with a big beard. So if they want to think of God, they'll give him a human form and sits on a throne someplace. But here we have in the Vedic literature, God takes animal forms of all things, which is real strange. So we get the Varaha, which is a boar or a pig. Very astonishing, because generally we don't think of pigs as very beautiful or graceful or whatever. But when the Lord becomes Varaha, he is astonishing in his beauty. When the devatas saw the appearance of Varaha, how he appeared from Brahma's nostril, then they were so surprised that he started praising him, because he was so astonishing and beautiful. So when the Lord takes any of these forms, he very, very remarkable. He took the form of Narasimha, which is half man and half animal. More remarkable, because it's not just animal, but half animal and half man, Narasimha. Or he takes a horse form, Hayagriva. And not only these type of animals, we can say mammals, we call them in biology, he'll take lower forms also, like reptilian and fishy forms, etc. So he's Kurma, the turtle, Matsya, the fish, Ananta, a snake, Hamsa, a bird. So we get all sorts of varieties of animals represented here in the Supreme Lord. How is it possible? Because he is supreme and he can do anything with, and he can still remain spiritual and complete with all powers. So, therefore, a variety of forms are there. So, this is not unusual, because if you look at the moon every day, it's changing. It's one moon only, but it's changing. Changing in what? Amount of light. Okay? So now it is all, it's getting towards its Ekadasi, and then in a few days it's going to be Amavasya, where the moon disappears, there's no light at all. Then the next day after that, a little bit of light again. The next day a little more light. The next day a little more light, until we get finally Purnima again. So the moon keeps changing in the amount of light it shows, but it's one moon. Similarly, the Lord is one, but in these different forms, he manifests different amount of qualities, just like the moon manifests different amounts of light. This way, one form expands into these other forms, which manifest different amounts of qualities. That's one Supreme Lord, ultimately. So, according to the amounts of power, just like the moon is manifesting different amounts of light, so the Lord, in these different forms, manifests different amounts of powers. So the in one class we call the Avesh forms. These are jivas with special powers given by the Lord eternally. So we have a group of jivas that have special powers in spiritual bodies. So the Kumaras are there, the four Kumaras, Narada Muni, Prithu, Parsaram, Kalki, Buddha, and the Kali Yuga avatar. Except when Lord Chaitanya comes. So these are all considered to be Shaktavesh avatars, Savesh avatars, jivas with special powers. And even Shiva, Ashana Shesha, who holds up the earth, the Bhumandala, he is considered to be a jiva, Shaktavesh avatar, special jiva. So these are actually not the Lord, but they got special powers, so they're classed as Supreme Lord. The other Vishnu, Sesha, who's the bed of Vishnu, he is considered to be an expansion of Shankarshan. So he's not a jiva. And this is the Sesha that holds up the Bhumandala. So when we come to the actual forms of the Lord, not jivas, but the Lord himself, some of the forms show a minimum of powers, and they appear for a short period of time, and then they disappear. So we have Mohini Avatar, who comes and takes the nectar from the demons and gives it to the devatas. And then later on she appears to Lord Shiva. Minor pastime, doesn't show too much powers. Huh? Hamsa avatar, who came and then he spoke jnana and bhakti and then disappeared. Yuga avatars, who spread each Yuga Dharma. So they appear and they teach the Yuga Dharma, whether it's meditation or sacrifices or deity worship or chanting the name of the Lord, and then disappear. Some show a little more powers. Huh? So we have Dhanvantari, who established Ayurveda. Huh? And we have Rishabhadev, who taught complete renunciation. Vyasadev, who writes all the Puranas, Brahma Sutras, Mahabharata, Dattatreya, and Kapila, sages. When they show more powers, they're called Vaibhava. And if they show more powers than that, they're called Prabhava. Huh? So we have Kurma, Matsya, Narayan, Prishnigarbha, who was the form that Dhruva saw when he did his meditation. Baladev, 14 Manvantara avatars who stay there for 71 yuga cycles. And then we have Paravasta forms. They're more powerful. So we have Vraha, who lifts up the Bhumandala out of the Garbhadaka ocean. Hayagriva, who manifests the Vedas from his breathing. Hari, Vaikuntha, Ajita, and Vamana. Vamana Dev, of course, spread throughout the universe and broke a hole in the universe by which the Ganga flowed in. Vaikuntha made a planet, a Vaikuntha planet within the material world. Ajita is the form of the Lord who sat on top of the Mandara mountain so they could get the, when they were churning the ocean, so they could get the nectar. Hari is the form who rescued Gajendra from the crocodile. So above that we have Purna forms, more powerful forms. So we have in this category Narasimha, Rama, and Krishna at the very top. So they show great amounts of powers and qualities. Consequently, we'll find that they're very popular in worship. So we have a lot of Rama temples in India, a lot of Krishna temples in India, a lot of Narasimha temples in India because they're very powerful. On the other hand, we've got not so many Varaha temples, not so many Kurma temple. I think it's one Matsya temple in Srikakulam. A Kurma temple. No, the Kurma temple's in Srikakulam, near Vijayawada. There's a Matsya temple in Trivandrum, a little Matsya this big in one temple. I think that's the only one in India, actually. So some of them are not so popular. But Narasimha, many temples. Ramchandra, many temples. And Krishna, many temples. Yeah, so we have Avesha, Prabhava, Vaibhava, Paravasta, and then Purna forms. And then Purna forms we have Narasimha, Rama, and Krishna. So one God, many forms. Some show less powers, some show more powers and qualities. Krishna at the top, he shows most qualities, most powers. So he's put at the top. So this is the whole point of Bhagavatam, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna's put in this position because of manifestation of powers and qualities more than the other forms. Which is the conclusion of the Brahma Samhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satcharananda Vigraha Anadi Ari Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. So, what are the various Shaktis that Krishna shows in a remarkable way? Well, he shows a lot of Shaktis, but even there, sweetness is also very prominent. And this is less prominent in the other forms of the Lord. So he shows powers, more powers than the other forms. He shows more mercy than the other forms. And he shows more sweetness than the other forms. And therefore we put him in this special position. So among the sweetnesses is the sweetness of the flute. No one else No other avatar form plays the flute and invokes sweetness like Krishna. All the forms of the Lord are very beautiful. They're spiritual beauty, so they're all attractive. But they're all attractive in a different way. And of all the attractive forms, Krishna's got a sweet attractiveness to him. A madhurya rupa, a very sweet beauty. Which invokes a very intimate type of affection for Krishna, which we don't find in the other forms. His lila, or his pastimes, are very sweet. He has very intimate relationships with his devotees, and therefore they act very informally with each other. So we don't see this intimacy between Krishna and his devotees in the other forms as we do in Krishna. So he has remarkable pastimes, and these are recorded in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, particularly his childhood pastimes. So we don't see those remarkable pastimes in other forms. And he has exceptionally sweet devotees of all sorts. So we have many, many devotees as servants, many devotees as friends, sakya, equal, many as parents who are superior to Krishna, and many lovers, the gopis, in conjugal rasa. All very intimate in their relationship with Krishna. So these are the remarkable sweetnesses of Krishna. And that sweetness is, concentrated in the pastimes of and the relationship of Radha and Krishna. This is where sweetness reaches its highest peak in the spiritual world. And therefore we worship Radha and Krishna because of that. So we have a remarkable form in our particular Kali Yuga, and that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is simultaneously the Yuga avatar, plus he's a form of Krishna with the mood of Radha. So this is a very remarkable form. There's no other form like this. So Krishna's at the top as Swayam Bhagavan, and Lord Chaitanya is also Swayam Bhagavan, but he is different because he has the mood of Radha. Which is expressed in this verse here, which is quoted at the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which Krishna is trying to experience what Radha experiences and see what are the qualities in Krishna that Radha prefers, etc., and to understand the greatness of Radha's love. So he desired to understand the greatness of Radha's love, the qualities in Krishna that she appreciated, and her bliss, her joy. What is the greatness of her joy? So to experience that, then Krishna took the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the mood of Radha to experience what Radha experiences in relation to Krishna. So he acts as a devotee of Krishna with the feeling of Radha. Thus the Supreme Lord Hari, richly endowed with their emotions, appeared from the womb of Sachi Devi as the moon appeared from the ocean. So not only is the mood of Radha, he also has the complexion of Radha. So Radha is golden in color, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is golden in color. Therefore we can say that Radha and Krishna get combined within Gauranga or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because essentially it's Krishna, but he has the bhava or the mood of love of Radha, and he takes up the complexion of Radha. So technically, of course, Radha is the Shakti of Krishna, the internal Shakti of Krishna, Hladini Shakti. And the Shakti and Krishna are non-different, and particularly the Bliss Shakti or Hladini Shakti is non-different from Krishna, because Ananda or bliss is the essential quality of Bhagavan. So therefore, the Hladini Shakti is his main Shakti in this part of him. But they separate in the form of Radha and Krishna. So Radha is Sladini Shakti and Krishna is Krishna. So they're actually one, but they separate. But then when Gauranga comes, then again they merge together, because there's Krishna with the mood of Radha. So Gauranga is a combination of Radha and Krishna. So a very special form. And he takes the complexion of Radharani also. So Lord Chaitanya is called Gauranga, which means golden limbed. Another name for Lord Chaitanya is Hemanga, which Hema also means gold. It's golden limbed. At the same time, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, but there's a rule that in Kali Yuga, the Lord does not appear. He's called Tri Yuga. So this is explained in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam. In this particular verse, you see in the last part, it says, since you will be covered in Kali Yuga, you're called Tri Yuga. It's a channa kalao. Yet abhavas tri yoga atta satvam. So you get covered up in Kali Yuga. So then how do we have a Yuga avatar, or Kalki, or Buddha in Kali Yuga? So Rupa Goswami explains that these are not actually avatars in the true sense, they are Shaktavesh avatars, because they're jivas. So this way, Krishna remains tri yuga. Not the full Lord, but Shaktavesh forms appear. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not a Shaktavesh avatar. So he appears in place of the Yuga avatar this time, but he's Krishna himself. But then again, he should be true Yuga. So what does he do? He covers himself, channa. He doesn't act like Supreme Lord. He disguises his powers. He acts like a devotee of the Lord. So he often hides his powers, as we see in the case of when he was with Prakasananda. He just acted like a humble sannyasi in the corner, didn't show any powers, and they were wondering why he was so humble and not discussing with them. So he acts as a devotee in most cases, and he doesn't act like Krishna and play a flute or have a rasa dance. At the same time, he is supreme. Though he is a devotee, he is supreme. So just to illustrate this, sometimes he manifests himself as Supreme Lord to his devotees only, not in public. So to Ramananda Roy, in Puri, he manifested the form of Radha and Krishna. And to Advaitacharya, he manifested a universal form. Just as Krishna manifested the universal form to Arjuna. So Advaitacharya saw this universal form. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. To Murari Gupta, Lord Chaitanya appeared as Vraha, lifting up the earth. To Advaitacharya, Lord Chaitanya appeared as Balaram. So at different times, Lord Chaitanya therefore manifested different forms, not publicly, but privately to devotees. So he became Matsya, Kurma, Narasimha, Vraha, Vamana, Ramchandra, Buddha, Kalki, and Krishna. So he would do this and then make them disappear. But this is all private, because he is Channa Avatar. So just as is explained, when Krishna appeared in this material world, all the other forms of the Lord merged into his body. They have their places, they have an abode, eternal abode, but they all merged into Krishna when he appeared in the material world. And this way they could participate in his pastimes. And then when Krishna disappeared, they all left and went back to their abodes again. So this shows that Krishna is everybody. So similarly, Lord Chaitanya is everybody, and he would manifest the pastimes of these different avatars. So then, Lord Chaitanya also manifested a remarkable form to Sarvabhauma, and also to Nityananda. That's a six-arm formed. a combination of Rama, Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya. So this is a very remarkable form that no one has seen at all before. So after Lord Chaitanya explained the Atmarama verse, then he roared and like a lion or something, or thunder, and displayed this six-armed form called Sadbuja, six arms. The six-armed form featured Sri Krishna playing the flute with two hands, Sri Rama holding bow and arrows, and Sri Chaitanya Dev holding a danda. It's a stick here, sannyas stick, and a water pot, kamandalu. So here, this, Lord Chaitanya was there with the signs of a sannyasi, Ramchandra with his bow and arrow, and Krishna playing his flute. So three forms in one. So why did he have three forms? Anyway. So, Lord Chaitanya explained, I've shown this to you because at that time Sarvabhauma, who had previously was a logician in a Maya body, he surrendered to Lord Chaitanya after Lord Chaitanya spoke to him and convinced him. So, to give him mercy, he showed these this form with three forms combined in one. So when he saw that form, Sarvabhauma was convinced, Lord Chaitanya is Supreme Lord. And he became very, very ecstatic. So what? Why Rama? Rama, of course, with his bow and arrow, represents the power of Supreme Lord. He can control everyone, chastise everyone, punish all the demons, protect the devotees, etc. So very powerful. Why Krishna? Because Krishna was playing his flute. We know Krishna is very sweet. So Madhurya Venu, playing the flute, was one of Krishna's four special qualities, his sweetnesses. And what is Lord Chaitanya? Lord Chaitanya is, we can say, the most merciful, because he likes to give the highest gift of all, love of Radha Krishna, to the most fallen people of Kali Yuga. And he's also Radha, the mood of Radha, Krishna with the mood of Radha, and Radha is most merciful. She's the most merciful devotee. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya represents mercy. So we have all three combined, three aspects of God. Previously I said that the Krishna should, he manifests power, sweetness, and mercy. An example of that, of course, is found combined in killing a putana. So he was this little baby, but he sucked out the life air of putana and she died. And she was a big demon, 8 miles long. Great power in a small child. At the same time, we have mercy. What's the mercy? The mercy was that Putana went to the spiritual world. She went beyond material world, beyond liberation, and she got a place in the spiritual world as a nurse with a spiritual body. Great, great mercy. And of course, sweetness. Krishna, in that, just as in that pastime, he remained as a small little child, and Mother Yasoda was horrified when he was sitting on top of Putana. He grabbed her, she grabbed him and began to protect him and give him milk as her child. So Krishna manifests all power, sweetness, and mercy, but here we see as the Sadbuj, these things became separated as Rama, Krishna, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So these three aspects of the Supreme Lord manifested very nicely here. So, as I previously said, Lord Chaitanya manifests all these different forms, just as Krishna manifests these forms. Actually, when Gargamuni came to give the names to Krishna and Balaram, then he mentioned that in the Lord appears in different times as the white form and as the red form. That's the white form in Satya Yuga, the red form in Treta Yuga, and the black form now as Krishna, and also the yellow form, which is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So usually the Kali Yuga form is not black, is not yellow as black, but when Gargamuni was speaking, then he will appear in the yellow form. So he was indicating Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. But he also indicated whatever is in Krishna is also in this yellow form, so they're non-different. So the same powers in Krishna's sweetness and powers and mercy will be available in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. As Krishna has all the powers of all the different forms of the Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also has all these powers. And we can say that's represented more or less by the form of Sadbhuja, where he has manifesting Rama and Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in discussing the different forms, ultimately Krishna is put at the top, and he's identified because of his four extra qualities of sweetness or madhurya: his sweet flute, his sweet devotees, his sweet form, and his sweet pastimes. So he's very prominent in sweetness. Vishnu, of course, is prominent in Aishwarya or power. So when we have the sweetness, then the power gets, we can say, diminished, and it doesn't show so much. If we have a power, the sweetness disappears. If we have Krishna and the sweetness, the power disappears. So they act a little bit differently. But Krishna's prominent in sweetness, so the powers get a little bit hidden behind the sweetness. Chaitanya is very prominent with his mercy. And that mercy takes the form of Sankirtan movement, where Lord Chaitanya delivers all the jivas of Kali Yuga and gives them the highest prema through Sankirtan. So that we can say that's a difference between the two forms. So sometimes they say that Krishna is Madhurya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Audarja. So that means this mercy or compassion, generosity, audarja. That's his particular quality. That's the difference between Lord Chaitanya and Krishna. One is madhurya, one is audarja, mercy. So the mercy ultimately of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that he delivers the madhurya, the sweetness of Radha and Krishna. So though we say he is prominently audarja, then through his audarja or his mercy, the jivas can realize the sweetness of Krishna, Radha and Krishna. So therefore the Lord Chaitanya is also got the sweetness in him because he delivers Radha and Krishna to the people of Kali Yuga. Okay, that's it. Fine. Any question there?
I've only heard recently some devotees have put together some information which suggests that, well, when I hear that the Buddha is an incarnation of God, I think of Gautama Buddha. Mm-hmm. And some devotees have said there's actually two Buddhas. Mm-hmm. And there was the one that was Gautama Buddha, who was essentially a man, and then the incarnation of God was a different form of Buddha. Apparently the birthplace and the Bhagavatam doesn't match up either to Gautama Buddha's birthplace. Mm-hmm. What's your understanding of this?
I think there was a book written by Keshav Maharaj, who was the sannyas guru of Prabhupada. He wrote a book, he found in some library some books, which are explaining this. So based on that, he wrote a book about the identity of Buddha. I didn't read the whole book, but there's a book he wrote, and so he gives the different evidences for saying that the Buddha that we worship here isn't the incarnation. It's a different person because the details are a little bit different, whatever like that. So that's probably where that comes from, those arguments come from. which may be true. At the same time, our acharyas don't really comment on the whole issue of that, whether there's two, they don't say anything about two Buddhas. Definitely say there's two Kapilas, because one is atheistic, and then we have the Kapila in the Bhagavan who is not atheistic at all. So there they make it some definite explanation, but in terms of Buddha, they don't really say anything, so we don't know. Of course, with Buddha also, there's two things. There's one description given in the first canto, and then the one given in the second canto, and they look quite different, so that's another cause of mystery. But then again, our acharyas don't get into that, so couldn't say.
So is there two sets of teachings that have been recorded?
Where? With Buddha?
In relation to the Buddha, because obviously we have Gautama Buddha's teachings, which are available, and then if there were two Buddhas, you don't
apply. We don't know. Well, if there are two Buddhas, we don't seem to have two teachings. Maybe there are two personalities and they got merged into one and we have one teaching or something, possibly. I couldn't say because I haven't investigated. But it's a little mysterious also because Buddha did not appear so much previous to us as something, before Christ sometime. But there is a wide... There's a discrepancy among scholars when he appeared, whether it was a few hundred years before Christ or whether it was a thousand years or so like that. So there's, that's rather strange, it's a big gap of years, it's a long time. So there's some murkiness about the whole scholastic, historical Buddha. Who was he actually? Because, in that sense, so I don't know, but... Goswamis don't mention anything about that, the controversy there. Of course, with Putana, she got the position of a nurse because she tried to feed Krishna, even though it was poison. But she was trying to feed him milk, and so it was like a nurse, so therefore she got a position of a nurse. That's Krishna's mercy. And she dressed up like a gopi also, so therefore Krishna was a little affectionate for that reason. But the reason, when she became a nurse for that reason, but she also didn't, she's a nurse, not a mother. So she got a type of vatsalya rasa, but a little bit indirect vatsalya rasa. So the reason is that she actually started out as a demon and she didn't have any bhakti. By the extraordinary mercy of Krishna, then she became a devotee and she got some position in the spiritual world. But to have an intimate relationship in Vatsalya Rasa, you have to be a devotee, not a demon. So therefore the demons may get this if they get killed by Krishna, but the devotee, if they practice, as some devotees do, and they aspire for Vatsalya Rasa, then they get a more direct Vatsalya Rasa as devotees. So it's a difference between a demon getting perfection and a devotee getting perfection. A devotee will get a much closer relationship with Krishna. Because he's practicing with devotion, whereas Putana was actually a demon with a hostile attitude. So therefore, whatever the devotees gets is much greater than what a demon gets. So we should never think, well, I'll just become a demon, then I can get killed by Krishna. Well, spiritually, you could, but then, if Krishna's merciful to you, but then again, you wouldn't get the same type of relationship as a devotee gets by practicing with bhakti.
Okay. But the mainstream Buddhism, they don't accept the Bhagavatam word.
So which one are they worshipping? The one of the thousand years? The first one or the second one?
The second one.
And it's all his teachings? It's not a mixture of teachings?
It sort of gets mixed up. They talk about the Eightfold Path, etc. The Bhagavatam would have been mentioned then.
Yeah.
The first one would have been.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So, we have the Bhagavatam, the Shakyamuni, whereas they have, it was the son of a priest who became enlightened under the Bodhi tree, etc. But a lot of the teachings have just been merged together, so.
We can't tell.
Generally, we just talk about one Buddha, but according to him, there was an essay he wrote, where there are two Buddhas who've been just searching on
that. Oh, okay.
Seems quite comprehensive. But as I said, the mainstream Buddhists don't accept the Bhagavatam Buddha. But we hear Nagyaya Goswami, who writes about it in his songs.
So
as Vaishnavas,
Of course, there is directly said in the Jayadevs that it was because of the animal sacrifices. Yeah, he came like that. But the Buddha that we, the historical one they worship now, doesn't seem to get involved in the animal sacrifices at all. But he was involved with rejecting the tapasya. He did, and according to his life, he didn't want to do that. He did austerities for many years, and then he gave it up. Whatever. I don't know about animal sacrifices. But nevertheless, he does show ahimsa. So they accept that, yes?
To some degree. Different Buddhist groups have different ideas. I was taken for one Buddhist group in Perth, and they had little pretty deliveries, so they're offering alcohol and meat. And I asked, just thought of innocently, why do you offer meat? They said, it's not very much. So obviously there's not a Madhura leader with him. So he would just go up to Vatsalya, know his parents. That was just one observation about with Krishna. Has the full range of the Rasas, the Lord Caitanya, and goes up to Vatsalya.
Well, the Madhurya is covered up with Gadadhar Pandas. It's muted because he cannot play Krishna, so therefore. But then the Garanga Nagarais put it back again, and they think of Krishna as Krishna, or the Lord Caitanya as Krishna, and they act as gopis with the mood of the gopis. So they express Madhurya Rasa for Garanga in that way. There's also Madhurya Rasa with Lakshmi Priya and Vishnu Priya, but it's a little different. It's not the Vraja. It's like Narayana, so to speak, Shri and Bhu, so it's more like Vaikuntha. So they call them Gaur Narayana in the Yogpeet. There's Lord Chaitanya and there's Lakshmi Priya and Vishnu Priya on either side, so they call that Gaur Narayana. It's just like Krishna with Mother Yasoda. So when Mother Yasoda comes with a stick, Krishna runs away. And when she catches him, he starts trembling. And then he cries. So is Krishna faking it or not? If he's faking it, then that would mean he's just pretending. And he doesn't have any feeling for Mother Yasoda. So he's actually feeling it. But then if he's feeling it, it's a contradiction, because how can it be God? How can he have fear? Because he's in control of everybody. How can he cry? So it's a little contradictory. So when Krishna is in his pastimes with his devotees, we can say his omniscience and all these things get covered up. So he also gets affected by his own yoga maya, so to speak. And then he's not acting as a role. He actually feels as a small child with Mother Yasoda, or as with the gopis, he has Madhurya Rasa, or with the cowherd boy Sakya. And they're all like competing moods, different moods completely, but they don't overlap with the different devotees. So he can be many things at once. So he can play ignorant, but he's actually all knowledgeable, like this. So he can play, he can be as Krishna with Radha, then he has one mood. And then when he's that, we can't say that he can also be everything that Radha is simultaneously. He takes the role of identifying with Krishna, and then Radha is separate. Also, we know that the Shakti and the Shaktiman are one, so Radha Krishna are one. So in that sense, yes, he would know. But they separate. And when they separate, then they act separately. They become separate, and then he experiences one thing, Radha experiences something else. And they have some relationship like that. Yeah. Well, of course, this is the esoteric reason. The external reason is he comes as the Yuga avatar to spread Sankirtan. Another reason, of course, is he came because Advaitacharya was worshipping the Shalagram, so you have to come and deliver the people of Kali Yuga. Okay, fine. Hare Krishna.